thenewspress.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10 and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Montecito Bank and Trust, proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years. Pierre LaFond, Wendy Foster, offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines. Habitat for Humanity, building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. And CSU Channel Islands, no matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And today we have three guests from Family Services Agency, which is a fantastic agency. We've had them on a number of times. We've got Christine Crowther, who is a counselor at San Marcos High School, but part of the FSA family. We have Nancy Rank, a MFT and Behavioral Health Program Director at Family Service Agency, and Megan McClintock, who is also an MFT, and I guess you manage the Youth and Family Program for the Big Brothers Big Sisters?
The school counseling. I'm the program manager. So I oversee the school based
counseling. Okay, well, the first thing is you never correct the host.
Okay, and you are correct.
Because the host is very sensitive and, you know, you have to, okay, I'm sorry. This is really an important, we have a, I'm glad you're here because, you know, AHA has been around for almost 20 years and their mission is to really help kids and help teens. And it's very tough to be a teen at any time. It was tough for me to be a teen. And today it is particularly difficult with social media, with the politics as they are. So when you look at what you do, what are the big issues that are confronting teens today?
Well, of course, we're involved in looking at mental health issues and concerns, and we know that there are numbers of kids who are chronically sad, who are experiencing anxiety, and a number of kids who do have suicidal thoughts at some point or another.
So there is a stigma to having a mental problem. When I was 13 or 14, my parents sent me to a psychiatrist because I had some issues. And it was a secret. I was told not to tell any of my friends. I went to, bowling class on Mondays. and now I talk about it on the radio because I'm proud that I'm normal. See, I'm probably the most normal person you know because I've had so much therapy. But for kids today, I guess there's still a stigma, isn't there? How do you get the kids to ask for help?
Well, I think the first step is really going and providing education and doing programs to help them understand that everyone experiences issues and everyone goes through situations in their life where they might need a little bit of extra help and support, and basically to let them know that people do have these thoughts and these experiences and that it's okay to reach out. I tell kids all the time, you know, even your mental health professionals are probably seeing therapists. It's completely okay to need a little bit of extra help.
What about the whole idea of telling? What if I'm a good friend of someone and I sense that person who's my good friend has got trouble? Is there an ethic that prevents kids from asking for help for someone who can't ask for help?
I mean, I think, yeah, that happens all the time for kids, that they make commitments to a friend that they won't share some secret, and some secrets need to be shared.
And how do you break through that? How do you consult at San Marcos, Christine, and so you're dealing directly every day with these kids. Is there an education program to help the kids help other kids? I mean, is there sort of an understanding that it's okay?
So we've actually been really lucky to be able to partner with the school district and last year started a new program called the Signs of Suicide program, where actually in every class there was a presentation given about things to look out for, about concerns that might indicate that someone's really struggling with depression or really struggling with self-harm. And a lot of that curriculum was about overcoming, you know, that culture of you don't tell your friend's secret, and just saying, you know, safety comes before everything. And kids who are having those thoughts, they aren't necessarily able to make the best decision for themselves in that moment. And so, you know, we did that presentation. And then after, kids were given screening questions to see whether they are at risk for some sort of self-harm, and also given an opportunity to self-refer, to say, I'd like to come and talk to a counselor either about myself or about a friend or about, you know, anything that they might need support with. And we checked in with those kids. So we're definitely working with the schools to try to address that issue.
What about parents? You know, parents can be, unfortunately, not the most sensitive or the most understanding, particularly if they come from a different culture. So do you have a responsibility to talk to a parent about the problems that you're seeing in the child? Or is that something that would make the kid not want to come to you? How do you deal with parents?
I think it depends on the student, but we almost always try and include the parent in the therapy. We get consent from the parent first, but if the parent is not willing to consent and we feel like the student really, you know, needs the support, we can go ahead and allow the student to self-consent. But we are always trying to make efforts to include the family, because these kids eventually are going to go home and, you know, they're going to need support when they're at home as well. So we make contact with the families. We try to, of the students who are on our caseload, at least once a month to check in and to get feedback how it's going at home. And also they're the experts on their children. They're the ones who live with them. And so trying to incorporate them into the treatment.
Well, 30% of our population lives below the poverty line, which is really shocking given what we typically think of this community. And culturally, there is sometimes a resistance, not only culturally but economically, to therapy. If you're just trying to get food on the table, therapy almost sounds like an indulgence. Mm-hmm. So is there sort of a need to educate the parent about how important this is, and it's not just, you know, pandering of the child, it's actually going to keep the child alive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I mean, we have educational programs as part of our agency as well. Our family support services program does parenting education, some of those which are targeted toward parents of adolescents. And so, yeah, helping them to develop their relationships with their kids and to understand the value of things like counseling for their kids.
So there's a large percentage of kids that have chronic sadness. But I remember years ago, people were sad when I was growing up. Is it worse now? Are kids, or are we just knowing it, learning about it? Or is there a change? Are more kids sadder than they were when I was young?
That's a good question. It yeah. seems like social media hasn't helped the mm-hmm. cause mm-hmm. in terms of adolescents feeling disconnected, although it's supposed to connect, but in actuality it's doing the opposite from what we're finding. And there's this desire to connect and be with each other in person as opposed to communicating through, you know, text message or the phone in some way. So I'm sure that has
it's always been difficult to be a teen. You know, some people have said that a teen has like half a brain, and it hasn't developed yet. I mean, mm-hmm. In a way, it's true mm-hmm. that they don't have the maturity to deal with life as it should, and with all of the things coming at them. I guess it's even worse now today than it was before. And one of the things I want to talk about when we come back is you talk about the internet is bullying, because mm-hmm. bullying has been magnified because now the megaphone is louder. And whereas before you may have felt intimidated by one person, today that one person could make you feel ashamed in front of hundreds and hundreds, if not more. Mm-hmm. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone?
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Christine Crowther, a counselor at San Marcos High School and a member of the Family Services Agency team, Nancy Rank, a MFT, and a member of the Family Services Agency who specializes she's the director of the Behavioral Health Program, and Megan McClintock, an MFT, and you're the program manager of Big Brothers Big Sisters.
School-based counseling.
So why did you mislead us?
Megan's got a new job.
I don't
just
know.
Trying to make it
I'm
fun
not
for you.
Sure.
Okay. So what I'm going to do then is not introduce you again.
Okay, fine.
So school-based counseling. So are you her boss?
Yes.
Okay, good. So behave yourself.
Yes. Yeah.
So we're talking about bullying and the magnifying effect of being taunted by somebody on the web. And you were saying during the break that one of the problems besides the actual victim, but also the people that do things that are stupid on the web have what you call a digital footprint that's mm-hmm. pretty long, will live longer than you.
Mm-hmm.
Kids realize, first of all, about that, and two, do they realize the damage it causes other people? I mean, the empathy is something I really want to get into is, you know, how... Let's start with that. Are kids less empathetic than when I was young? And if so, can you actually teach empathy?
Wow. Great questions. Yeah.
I don't know if they're less empathetic. I think that's part of our job to help teach empathy and to encourage others to step in someone else's shoes and get a feel for what it might be like to be that other person mm-hmm. or what they've said or done, how it could possibly affect another person. That's part of the therapy is what we do. So certainly we try and...
And that's, I think, why restorative justice programs work. Because
yes.
you're not just punishing, you're actually telling the kid, hey, mm-hmm. look what you're doing.
Yeah. The schools are adopting that approach more and more.
Which is great.
Yeah, so we're helping them develop those empathy skills, absolutely. But as they're developing those skills, it's absolutely true that maybe those things they do that might be hurtful have more of a potential to be more hurtful because it's broadcast out to so many of their peers, right? It used to be just maybe one-on-one or a group of kids who would be bullying each other, and now things get passed around through the whole school population really quickly. And so I think that's a big challenge we're dealing with.
And they can do that from the privacy of their own bedroom or something, so they don't really see the reaction face-to-face.
Yeah, it's easy to be a bully if you don't have to face your victim. So one of the things that's in the news constantly is the whole opiate crisis. Is drugs, this was a problem in my day, but is drugs still an issue that we need to address with some concern?
Absolutely. And something that's actually different this year, at least in the high schools, is that whenever a student has any sort of drug-related or substance-related disciplinary infraction, they get referred for screening so that we really talk to them to get to the bottom of whether it's a drug and alcohol issue, whether it's a mental health issue, whether it's both, and what kind of services we need. So instead of just saying, okay, you are smoking pot on campus, you're suspended for 3 days, to also say, and how can we help have that not happen again? Or if it's self-medicating, how can we really get to the bottom and make sure you're getting the treatment you need? Because often it is, you know, kids trying to cope with ways the best way they can, and they haven't really been offered those other coping skills or those other ways to deal with stress.
And it's kids from all economic strata.
Oh, absolutely.
That are affected.
Well, you know, we talk about what's the difference between yesterday and today. I guess for a community like ours that has a pretty high percentage of Hispanic population, the idea that you may go home and your parents may not be there, it's a whole other layer of anxiety. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that be an issue over the last year where kids are really, you know, truly frightened of what's going to happen with our immigration policy?
Yeah, we have. We hear different stories from different programs in our agency, and we know that kids are experiencing that. Parents are experiencing that.
So what do you do about it? Besides vote.
right. Well, I know, again, in our family support services program that they, again, are trying to provide as accurate information as they can to families for resources that are available to them. I mean, you might address it with students.
Right. And just really acknowledging with students that is trauma, that having a parent deported is a huge trauma to go through, and that constant fear. And I think a little bit later we might actually talk about sort of toxic stress and the idea that toxic chronic stress really increases a lot of these mental health problems. So just giving them a place to talk and acknowledge those fears, and also making sure that they have some place where their services aren't going to depend on immigration status, where, you know, we really want to make sure that all students get served and have a safe place.
Free advice is worth what you pay for, so let me throw this out to you. My son, when we were living in New York, went to Friends Seminary as a high school. And what the Friends Quaker tradition is, you begin class with a chapel quiet time where everyone sits, the whole school sits around, and no one says a word unless you want to, and you stand up and you say whatever it is that you want to say. And it could be, you know, I had a bad night's sleep, and you just sit down. Nobody comments. Or you could say, my parents were just taking it away, or something that you could then get the community involved in. What do you think of that idea? You know, having a place where a place like a group where kids can, without fear, and, you know, HOD does this in their afternoon program, where, you know, kids can just talk about things that affect them. Or is there something like that?
This might actually be a good time to talk about a new program that we're starting in the schools this year that's specifically for kids who've been through various kinds of trauma. It's CBITS, it's Cognitive Behavioral Interventions for Trauma in Schools, and we're really lucky that the school district has been incredibly supportive of this and partnered in addressing trauma for kids.
By the way, I want to say to people who are listening on the radio who can't see her, you didn't use your nose to say that title.
I did write it down, though.
I know, but you were able to say that title without stumbling. I'm very impressed. Go ahead. Whatever it means.
So I can talk a little about what it means. It's helping kids understand, basically deal with that stress that comes from trauma. So to change the way that they think about their traumas, to change some of the things that they might be, ways that they might be coping with it that are unhealthy, to help them manage some of the symptoms of trauma, which can be physical, emotional, social. It's also to give them really that place to share and bond, like you were talking about, because one of the biggest things about trauma, whether it is having a parent with substance abuse issues and not knowing whether you're safe in your home or seeing violence, is that you feel isolated, right? You were talking about secrets earlier, that kids often feel like they're the only person in the world who has gone through this. And the power of a group of kids sitting in a room saying, you know, my story isn't your story, but I have a story too, and I felt like that too, and processing together is so powerful. So it's a combination of that group processing through stories, through art, through a variety of means, and individual sessions to really help them get that story out and deal with it. So we're going to be running those groups in, I think, hopefully all of the high schools this year, and I think Megan could probably talk about there may be a model for younger kids as well.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to piggyback on that. There's also a training component for teachers who can also identify students in their classrooms who may or may not be experiencing some form of trauma and how to handle that in a delicate way, not to get frustrated with certain behaviors or if they're seeing a student falling asleep in class or whatever it might be. So trying to educate not only the students but also the parents who have experienced some sort of trauma, and then the teachers who essentially are somewhat parents during the day, and how to handle some of the students who are.
And how about for therapists? Mm-hmm. I mean, you work all day with kids that have issues. Mm-hmm. Do you have trouble bringing it home at night?
We offer clinical supervision for all of our clinicians, so they once a week can come and talk about their cases and talk about how it may or may not be affecting them. And we're also going to be providing a support group for the academic counselors in all of the secondary schools who are also dealing with hearing a lot of these hard stories and hard situations. So we're going to help support the academic counselors, and then we help support each other. Especially with some of the signs of suicide program and all the assessments we're doing, it's really heavy, heavy work. And this community has experienced so much trauma with fires and floods and suicides, in addition to daily, you know, immigration and substance abuse. I mean, it's just been a very heavy, I would say, last 2 years. So we're really trying to wrap around the school as a whole and trying to support them.
I had these two young girls a couple of years ago on who were seniors at Santa Barbara High, and they were lesbians. And I said stupidly, I guess it's really good that you're in a liberal city like Santa Barbara because you don't have any pressure. And they looked at me and said, let me tell you something. People say to me, one of the girls said, that I'm not really gay, I'm doing it just to get attention. Mm-hmm. I mean, you would think that in the People's Republic of Santa Barbara, there wouldn't be any problems about acceptance, and yet it still exists here, which means there's a lot of work to be done. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, Improving Attitude, Creating Social Harmony, Bridging the Achievement Gap for Teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Christine Crowther, a counselor at Santa Barbara, San Marcos High School, part of the FSA team. Nancy Rank, the director of the Behavioral Health Program at Family Services Agency, and Megan McClintock, who is the program manager of the school's-based counseling program. I finally got that right.
Mm-hmm.
One for three ain't bad, as Meatloaf said very well. So let's just step back a second. We have three sensitive therapists here. Tell us about how you got interested in therapy. Start with someone from Indiana. What got you interested? What's your life when you were 5 years old look like?
Sure. I think initially I thought that I was interested in special education, and then learned more about psychology and therapy and those kinds of options that were available. And in fact, in high school, I was involved in an explorer post. That's kind of like a branch of the Boy Scouts, mm-hmm. the explorers, mm-hmm. that happened at our state mental hospital that was in Indianapolis. And so I learned more about mental illness through that organization and became more interested.
And so when you went to college, you knew what you wanted to study?
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's changed some, which populations I would work with and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
And Nancy?
That's Megan.
That I'm sorry. Christine.
Okay.
In my previous life, I was actually involved in politics and activism, and I got my degree in political science. And you were asking earlier about, you know, how do you work with these big issues like deportation? And I'd sort of throw economic inequality in there, too. And, you know, it honestly, it felt like beating my head against the wall. I was just so burned out and so frustrated with the way that things were. But I found that, you know, I ended up wanting more to work with people on an individual level. I've always been really interested in people's sort of interior lives and being able to help people through the stress that these big systemic issues cause. So I'm a social worker, and it's great because we're really encouraged to address both those macro level issues and the individual problems that sort of come from living in this society with all of its problems. So I shifted more to that individual work.
So who's going to win the midterms?
Ask me on Monday.
So Megan, what was
right?
Your
so interest? I was a film studies major at UCSB, which has nothing to do with being a therapist. But I found myself making a documentary about pregnant teenagers and wanting to be not having the screen as a medium for communication, but wanting to be on the other side of the screen in more face to face. I wanted to be able to help affect people more intimately in a therapeutic setting. So
speaking of women's reproductive rights, with Planned Parenthood, I guess not necessarily here, but with Planned Parenthood being threatened all over the country, has the 15-year-old girl woken up, which I found to be surprisingly non-interested in this whole issue, have they woken up to what's going on here with the whole issue of freedom of choice? Is that create angst, or that's just not part, people just take it for granted?
You know, I think actually a lot of these teenagers have sort of come of age during a time when they do expect their reproductive rights to be respected and things like birth control to be covered by their insurance free of charge. They just sort of take for granted, I can go and get my birth control. And they've really never experienced a world in which that wasn't the case. I'm not sure they necessarily know what the implications of that would be or how under threat it is.
Yeah, I've spoken to young kids today, and they just seem to not believe it's possible that things are going to change, and which is one of the problems with getting people to vote. Mm-hmm. People don't vote because they don't think it will have an impact, and it does have an impact, particularly if you live in Florida, mm-hmm. which none of us do. When you individually work with this, with a teen, you've already gotten halfway. But when you're in front of the first day of school, when you're looking at this large population of kids, how do you begin to assess? How do you start? I mean, is there a technique to beginning at where you can begin to isolate on who needs help?
Well, we, with this new relationship that we have with Santa Barbara Unified School District, we have a protocol where referrals will go to academic counselor. The academic counselor then transfers that referral to the dean. There's a new position at the schools. It's a dean of students who kind of filters.
At every school or just?
Yes, every junior high and high school. So that person kind of oversees what's happening. And it's actually turning out to be a really great position, and they're kind of our right hand, you know, man, so to speak, in terms of working with the kids. Then the dean will refer, kind of screen the students who were initially referred.
Is he or she trained?
Yes, they're trained.
So it's not just someone?
They're an administrative. It's an administrative okay. position. A lot of them have teaching credentials or have a lot of experience working with the with the students, and then the dean will then triage the referrals to a family service agency. That we have a lead counselor who does a screening and will determine whether that student is a good fit for our mental health therapist on campus. And we've also partnered with CADA, which stands for, I have to look it up, Council on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse. So if those students that come through our screening have some substance abuse history or issues currently, then we would refer the students to the CADA counselor that's on campus. And if this student is not a fit for what we have to offer on school campus, we'll refer them out to the community and follow up those referrals to make sure that they're being connected to services.
And do you charge the schools for this?
No, we have a contract with the schools, so they help to support it. We also contribute some of our funds as an agency, but it's free of charge for all students.
And at least at San Marcos, I don't know if this is the case at all of the high schools, but in addition to the referral process being open to academic counselors this year, it's open to teachers and all school staff as well. So really what we're doing is asking the professionals who see the students on a daily basis and know them and can recognize those issues and say, you know, okay, something changed about mm-hmm. this kid, right? They were doing great last year and now they're not focusing. They're not doing their work. They're, you know, they used to have these friends and now they don't. They can say, you know, somebody just needs to check out what's going on with this kid. And so that's really been a huge benefit to us to be able to partner with those people who know the kids best.
One of the really nice things about this community, there are so many interested groups working on this subject. Is there a collaboration, though? I mean, like, you guys familiar with AHA?
And, absolutely.
Because there are so many people with ideas, and you don't want them stepping on each other.
Right. We're part of it's called the Youth Well Coalition, where all of the nonprofits and providers come together, if it's once a month or every other month, and we discuss how we can best support the students in the school. So it's AHA, Pacific Pride, Hospice, Calm. There's a number of, you know, nonprofits in town. And so we get together and we discuss ways that we can all collaborate. And a lot of the referrals that we are giving, if the student isn't appropriate for counseling at school, we are referring to all of these other agencies, most mm-hmm. certainly. And Casa Pacifica, who has the safety program for if a student is actively suicidal and we need to have them assessed right away. So we have a great team of other nonprofits that are...
And what about the horrible subject of abuse? That must be really tricky to deal mm-hmm. with out of, you know, because you sometimes don't get the whole story, or you probably always don't get the whole story. Mm-hmm. And how do you deal with that?
So whatever part of the story we get, we're all mandated reporters, and our main role is to keep the kids safe. But we try to do it in a way that's really collaborative with the kid and feels respectful to the kid. So I start really every conversation with a teen by saying, here are the circumstances in which I would have to break confidentiality. And if I do, you know, let's talk about what that's going to look like for you and your family. And we're coming from a place of trying to keep you safe and trying to make sure these problems get addressed. You know, now that you've, because one of the worst feelings is when you tell somebody about abuse and nothing happens, right? So we're really trying to help them feel empowered in that process that, yeah, I do have to make this report, but I have to do it to make sure this doesn't keep happening to you. And I mean, sadly, I've already done that twice this year. It's definitely a very real issue for us, but we're so fortunate in some ways that the kids trust us to know those things that have happened to them and to help.
Yeah, and it's must be very frightening that because you don't know if it's going to work out for you. The kids who are in that position may feel they're going to be in worse shape. So besides trust, it's also, I guess, a great deal of fear and embarrassment. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone.
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. CSU Channel Islands is affordable and financial aid is available with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Christine Crowther, who is a counselor at San Marcos High School and a member of the Family Service Agency team. And Megan McClintock, who is the program manager for school-based counselors. So do you also have groups? Do you run group programs so kids can talk to other kids and feel that they're not alone? So far we've talked about sort of like one-on-one counseling. What kind of groups do you have?
Well, Christine had mentioned the CBITS program. Mm-hmm. So that's one group that's very specific for students who have experienced a significant trauma. And then we will design groups based on the referrals that come to us. So if we have a handful of kiddos whose parents are going through a divorce or anger management issues, so we'll kind of put the groups together based on, you know, topic specific, or there could just be a girls group or a women's group where they want to come and chat about, you know, whatever issues they might be going through. So yes, we do, and we're open to kind of creating those as the type of referral comes to us.
You mentioned trauma. So trauma can be something that happens now. It could have been something that happened 15 years ago. So what kind of trauma is predictive of issues?
So we've actually been really focused on some of the research about adverse childhood experiences. It's 10 specific categories, but please don't ask me to name them all. But I know that they include having a parent who's incarcerated, experiencing abuse or neglect, having significant substance use in the home, mental illness, witnessing violence, issues like that that are really predictive of poor outcomes later in life, not just to do with mental health, but also to do with behavioral issues, to do with physical health, right? Even, you know, things like heart attack, stroke, and all sorts of issues later on in life. So we've really been focused on that research to help inform us in our care of working with these kids.
I know there's confidentiality, but are there records so that when the kid gets to the next class, you don't have to start all over again? The teacher in the next class or the counselor get a record, or is that not permitted?
What we get is something called a release of information. We'll have the parent sign it saying it's okay to communicate some of this information with the other provider so that you're right. So they're not starting over. The student's not having to repeat their whole story and rehash. So we have a way where we can communicate and sort of pass the baton and share what we've been working on. Here's some of the therapeutic goals. Here's some of the progress and that type of thing.
So social emotional intelligence training is now, you know, something that everyone is sort of agreeing that is really, really good. Mm-hmm. But can we relate that to mental health? I know it's clearly something that we can look to in terms of outcomes of success in life if mm-hmm. you're socially emotional intelligent. But mm-hmm. is there linkage between being able to be socially emotionally intelligent and mental health? Is there a linkage that should be looked at?
Well, I think a lot of the work we do is focused on social, emotional, behavioral, and academic. I mean, we focus on all of those. So personally, from my perspective, they're all tied together. And that's a lot of that's one of the theoretical orientations called cognitive behavioral therapy, where your emotions, your cognitions, and your behaviors are all tied together. And we help to identify those and help the client to
I think you've explained it from the standpoint of a mm-hmm. therapeutic, but I'm talking mm-hmm. about in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not in therapy, we're in a classroom now. Mm-hmm. And if you just teach math and history, and you don't teach the kid how to become part of society, they're not going to do well. Mm-hmm. So is it, if someone has emotional problems, are they going to be not only hurt in their academic programs, but do they also have more difficult time learning, you know, skills that permit them to be emotionally capable?
Maybe. I think these things are really related, the idea of social emotional learning and intelligence and mental health, that at least for me, and I think for a lot of therapists, it doesn't really matter whether it's sort of lack of skills because no one ever taught you the skills, or whether it's a formal mental health diagnosis, sort of what you do about it is exactly the same, right? Which is help that kid really make those connections, learn those skills, so that, you know, it's not necessarily the origin of it which one of those things it is that is important, but all kids really need to be provided with that education, and I think the schools are doing a great job of integrating that into the curriculum. And then if it's really not working, if they're not getting it when it's being presented to them as part of the curriculum, then maybe they need that extra therapeutic support just to check in about, you know, what's going on with that.
I wonder if parents still, you know, I know they did in my day, if there was the touchy-feely courses, they would call them. You know, I want my kids to learn math because that will help them on the college board as mm-hmm. opposed to learning how to be a human being.
They have a curriculum in the elementary schools called Second Step, and it does teach social skills. And also in the high schools, they have, is it the Mental Wellness Center that does Mental Health Matters, I believe, in the second, actually in sixth grade. They come in and teach about various mental illnesses to sixth graders. And then in the high schools, they come into the health classes, I believe. I don't want to speak on behalf, but they're coming in and they're entering the classrooms and they're educating students on some of these.
Yeah, I've had them on the program. They want to destigmatize the whole notion that someone who doesn't admit to having a mental health problem should be stigmatized worse than someone who's seeking help.
Mm-hmm. And if you're struggling with crippling anxiety every day, you can't learn math, right? I mean, it's hard enough to learn math
learn math anyway.
With or without the anxiety, but certainly, or frustration tolerance. If you're getting stuck on a math problem and you can't, you know, you just melt down and can't, you know, move forward, those are skills that will help you persevere and keep going.
So here's a loaded question. The new superintendent, who's not so new anymore, of the Unified School District has really bought into this whole a notion that we need to look at the child holistically and look at the emotional aspect, not just the and so resources are being allocated, I see, to working on this subject, not just getting a new math teacher,
right?
Which is great. How long have you guys been doing this in the schools? Because the question is, do you see any demonstrable change?
We've been doing this for over 30 years.
You don't look that old.
Not me.
Sorry.
Particular, the agency. So we've been, and we're countywide. We're in Santa Maria and Lompoc and Santa Barbara and Carpinteria and kindergarten all the way up to, you know, senior year in high school. So we've been doing it for a very long time. And what I see, the trend is that our programs are growing and growing. So every year when there's cuts and the schools have to make decisions on how they're going to spend their money, luckily we are still part of the we're not on the chopping block for the most part. So I'm seeing it growing. That's the trend that I've seen year after year.
That's great. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Santa Barbara residents interested in a four-year degree have more than one choice. CSU Channel Islands is a four-year accredited university offering more than 30 academic programs that are interdisciplinary, multicultural, and centered on you, the student. Your professors are accessible mentors who go above and beyond to help you pursue an undergraduate or graduate degree or certificate to advance your career. Programs and workshops in classroom, online, with campuses in Thousand Oaks and Goleta. Call CSU Channel Islands at 805-437-8520 or online at csuci.edu.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Christine Crowther from Family Therapy Family Services Agency and a counselor at San Marcos High School, and Megan McClintock, who is the program manager for school-based counselors at the Family Service Agency. And we're talking about all of the good work that that you do. And one of the things that we didn't mention is that while you two speak beautiful English, you also have people who speak Spanish as well.
Yes. So there are now two school-based counselors in all of the high schools, and at least one of them speaks Spanish in every high school. And I don't know, in the junior highs, is that true as well?
Well, we have the equivalent of one full-time counselor in the junior highs, and that they either speak Spanish, yes, or their position is split to part-time and one of them. So, yes, we are covered with bilingual clinicians and all the
secondary. Funders don't people who donate money tend to now, for good or bad, look at outcomes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just good enough to say we do this, we do this. You need to show that you're actually making a difference. How do you know you're making a difference?
Well, this year we've contracted with UCSB, their evaluation program, so we have a very robust evaluation program. We're doing all sorts of pre- and post-assessments. We have parent satisfaction surveys that we're going to roll out, and they're online, and we're going to have the students who receive services also complete a satisfaction survey online. We're getting feedback from teachers. We're getting, you know, feedback directly from clients, and so we're doing our best to evaluate therapeutic outcomes and also just hearing about the experience that people have had in the program.
Okay. So I know you've asked me this a number of times to help you design a good questionnaire, but what about, you know, looking at a kid who is suffering academically and then goes through 2 years of counseling to see how that is that something that's worth looking at to see how it affects the whole child?
Yeah. So in our partnership with the district, that's the piece that they're going to do is look at attendance. They're going to look at disciplinary actions, and they're going to look at grades over the course of time to see if those students that we've served, if there's been any improvement in those areas. And that's the hope. That's definitely one of our goals, is to improve the academic overall academic success of these students.
So there are many resources that you provide. What are some of the resources that our listeners can look to if they see something that needs help?
Absolutely. So there are a number of resources that we have in the community. One of the first and most important ones is if you're worried that someone is perhaps a danger to themselves, might harm themselves in some way. For anyone under 21, you can call Safety, which is 888-334-2777. They are, I believe, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. now. They're no longer 24/7, but they can send someone out to assess in person if there's a concern. And then you can always call the National Suicide Hotline, and that's for anyone of any age. That's 800-273-8255. We also have a full resource flyer on our website, which is fsacares.org. And that has a lot of the organizations that we've talked about today, as far as Pacific Pride and CALM, CADA, AHA, our own Family Service Agency. So those are a lot of the, Megan, feel free if I'm forgetting someone to jump in. Those are the really local resources, and they have all of the contact information if any of those might be a good fit. So yeah, we have a lot of great resources and partners here in our community.
And once again, you did that without looking at anything. It's very impressive.
I've referred to most of them already this year.
is there a sense that? Well, let me ask it another way, a nice way. From a personal standpoint, is there a point where you just can't do it? Where you this burnout? I mean, how do you sort of rejuvenate yourself dealing with issues like this every day? I mean, it's not, sometimes it's like being a divorce lawyer. It's not that much fun to go to work every day.
Right. Well, I would think we all do it different ways. But self-care is really emphasized, and I think that might be something that's changed for mental health professionals over the last several decades. Vicarious trauma is really acknowledged, the fact that we do hear these really heavy things. So things like paying attention to our own self-care, exercise, sleep, even spirituality. I know for me, when I go home from work, I'm at home, and I'm with my family, and I don't do work, and I don't think about it, and then I come back the next day. You know, sometimes it's that physical not taking it with you.
Well, Christine and Megan, thank you, for being here. Thank you for all that you do. and thank Family Service Agency for all that they do. You've been listening to AHA Presents About Education. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.